Transformation of America by Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. Chapter 8, CIA's War on Drugs Operation, Eliminating Competition. I no longer had any mind of my own. I was absolutely void of free will and was now totally robotic. So was Kelly. We wore our charm school smile at all times, and did exactly what we were told to do. The only characteristic noticeably out of place was Kelly's age-inappropriate programmed vocabulary and mannerisms. Outsiders attributed this to her traveling within the country music industry. My public image was a programmed personality that always smiled, looked and talked like the proverbial airhead blonde that kept outsiders away by socializing only within my controlled environment. This lifestyle appeared quite normal for my role as Houston's much younger wife in the country music industry. When we were not traveling, I began each day at 4 a.m. with a minimum of 2 hours aerobic exercise. Afterward, I tended farm animals and did other chores, then cooked Houston a large country breakfast which neither Kelly or I were permitted to share. Houston would then order me to work to exhaustion on his 100-acre farm while he watched. These chores included hauling, stacking, and feeding out hundreds of bales of hay to our livestock each year, maintaining miles of electric fencing, cutting acres of grass with a push mower an average of twice weekly, busting concrete with a sledgehammer and mixing and pouring new cement, digging by hand and maintaining a 2-acre vegetable garden for canning, cutting, hauling, and slacking firewood for Houston, his neighbors, and friends, shoveling pickup truckloads of creek gravel to fill in enormous potholes in the gravel road leading to 11 rural residences including Jack Green's, and anything else Houston could think of that would wear me down. Houston's exhaustive slave driving work orders made my father's seem benevolent in comparison. The best of days were rough. I ate, like a bird, following bird's orders of 300 calories per day with no sugar or caffeine. My metabolism was low. I was trained to compute calories like a machine, eating more like a rabbit than a bird. I had to count every calorie, from a simple taste of what I had to cook for Houston to semen. Houston ensured that Kelly and I never got more than 2 consecutive hours of deep per night. He accomplished this through automatic mental alarm clocks that woke us up at 2-hour intervals, Kelly with asthma, and me with panic. These tactics contributed to Kelly's and my total inability to resist mind control. Traveling in the country music industry was no easier than existing on Houston's farm in Tennessee. It certainly lacked the glamour that outsiders usually associate with entertainment industries. CIA covert drug operations had permeated the industry. Entertainers were used to buy, sell, and distribute cocaine brought into this country by the U.S. government for the purpose of funding the Pentagon's and CIA's black budgets. Nashville's local government, from my perspective, was totally corrupted by these criminal covert operations. Cover-up, murder, drugs, and white slavery prevailed. Entertainers usually made and big only when they participated in CIA operations and / or were slaves themselves. I know of numerous entertainers in need of rescue and deprogramming from their mind-controlled existence, because it was discovered that voices could be harmonically tuned through mind control to captivate audiences. To quote my father, spies, like singers and actors, are made, not born. These entertainers have endured much of the same programming as I to permit them to carry out government operations in the course of their travels. Norwegian Caribbean Lines, NCL, cruise ships depart regularly from Miami, Florida and travel throughout the Caribbean and Mexico. NCL provides pleasure cruises to the public complete with entertainment like that of Alex Houston while carrying out CIA operations. Sue Carper, former director of entertainment procurement for all NCL cruise ships, would ensure that government covert activities staging were properly orchestrated. She rotated entertainers like Houston from ship to ship in order to avoid the scrutiny of clean U.S. Customs and Immigration's inspectors. I routinely took cruises with Houston, mooling cocaine and slash your heroin out of Haiti, the Bahamas, Mexico, the Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico to fund covert operations. While I was robotically carrying out transactions as ordered, I was also prostituted to South and Central American drug lords and politicians, as well as filmed pornographically. Houston made sure I was in the right place at the right time and switched me into the proper mode for each activity I was forced to carry out. In the early 1980s, this included passing messages to and from Senator Byrd, Baby Doc Duvalier, my Cuban contact, Puerto Rican drug lord Jose Busto, and others. In keeping with NCL's Caribbean operations, Byrd adjusted his use of programming themes to include the mirror reversal, interdimensional, air-water mind control theme used on me by NASA and the Jesuits. I often saw dolphins playing in the ocean while being transported from port to port via the cruise ships, but the popular Whales and Dolphins mind control theme was avoided in favor of a theme more suitable to my experience, that of the seabird Robert C. C. Byrd. He told me, Atlantis I has long been the epicenter of alien activity. The path is so well worn that there are holes in the fabric of time and space whereby airplanes and ships, even people, timelessly seemingly disappear, transformed into another dimension alien to this world. Likewise, we, aliens, came in, entering through the mirror reflection of the hole in the fabric of space, the deep blue sea. Some of us entered Earth's plane as whales and dolphins. And when we emerged from the sea, some of us came flying out. Or is that in? At any rate, we are here. Watch for the flying fish when you are out to sea/sea. When you see one, you will know it is kin to me. A flying fish by any other name is a sea bird. A sea bird. Robert C. Byrd. The drug business was booming for the CIA, and the only war on drugs I witnessed was that launched by the CIA against its competition. As quickly as I brought the NCL suitcases of drugs into the port of Miami, they were usually transferred to Houston's factory custom-built Holiday Rambler motorhome. Concealed compartments were built into the walls for hiding the illegal drugs. If I drove the drug-filled motorhome onto Nashville rather than deposit the drugs en route at Warner Robins Air Force Base in Macon, Georgia, the bulk was stored in the Hendersonville Mormon Food Storage, Bishop's Warehouse. Some cocaine was delivered to a music distributor in Nashville, Tennessee, where it was carefully packaged in participating entertainers' cassettes, for delivery along their carefully scheduled travel routes. Houston always kept a large amount of the cocaine for his own use and distribution. Oftentimes he ordered that I deliver the drugs to specific entertainers at the Grand Ole Opry and/or at the local shopping mall when we were not traveling. Most often, however, the larger loads of drugs remained concealed in the motorhome for distribution to CIA drug drops while we traveled the country music industry. These CIA drug drops included an abandoned amusement park near Youngstown, Ohio, Diamond Caverns 2 campground in Park City, Kentucky, and Swiss Villa Amphitheater in Lamp, Missouri. I was aware that tons of drugs were being handled via our military, but the hundreds of pounds I mulled were targeted for exclusive private distribution. An example of a typical Caribbean drug operation centered around the NCL port of call, Key West, Florida. Houston took Kelly and me to a nearby tennis court under the guise of playing tennis. In reality, I was to meet with CIA operative Jimmy Buffett, who devoted more time to the proliferation of CIA criminal covert activity than he did to his music career cover. Buffett was playing tennis. Referring to him as though he were to be my tennis instructor, Houston said, "There's your instructor. As soon as he gathers the balls, he should be over here to meet you." Noticing us, Buffett strode over and shook hands with Houston. "Hi, Jimmy/Houston said as though they were old buddies. "Hi, Alex and Elmer," Buffett responded, sarcastically using Houston's stage name. Oh, Houston said. Never one to know an insult when he heard it. He continued, what do your friends call you? What does it matter to you? Buffett asked, Uncle calls me Jim. I take it you're not the contact. Houston pointed to me, she is. That's more like it, Buffett smiled, a little bird told me I'd be meeting with a diamond in the rough. 3. I prefer a diamond in the buff, he said, I've got a studio across the street. As we walked toward his studio, I was oblivious to the meaning behind his conversation with Houston and commented, I understand you're an instructor. I wish I had brought my racket. I'm not that kind of an instructor, Buffett explained, I'm a point man for Uncle. And you've got an appointment with me. I have some instructions to give you. As we entered his studio, he said, welcome to paradise, and gestured me in. We went into the small living quarters, which may have appeared even smaller due to the electronic equipment, acoustic guitars, and furniture that filled the room. A black mirrored coffee table, atypical of cocaine users I'd known, was the clearest spot in the room, a gold razor blade, cocaine residue, an ashtray full of marijuana roaches, and a fan's deck of cards with the Queen of Hearts on top lay on the table. Tropical plants further cluttered the room. Standing between a perched, stuffed parrot and a banana tree, Buffett was saying, Key West is a key place to be. It's the key to the Caribbean, Cuba, Panama, any place that means anything to Uncle these days, I hold the keys. I'm keeper of the keys and I hold a few of yours. Looking at his parrot, he continued, the bird/bird says you respond to paradise, look deep into the parrot eyes. I did as instructed, and Buffett popped out the bird's ruby red eyes, which actually were dice, into his hand. Roll your eyes high while I roll my paradise, he ordered as he rolled the dice across the table. Stopping at the deck of cards, he picked up the jack of diamonds. I am a jack of all trades, he cryptically continued, and I trade in whatever Uncle orders. An order has been placed. You must follow orders and go to that place. Go to the White House Inn at the pier. Carry your laundry bag, full of cash, with you, and see the man in black. My Cuban contact almost always wore a conspicuous black trench coat. There is a laundryman on the dock itself. They do all my laundering for me, and will be expecting you. Watch for the seaman with the duffel bag. When you see the military green duffel bag, approach the desk. When he says, I need this laundered, but I do not have the time, you say, welcome to paradise. I will make sure it is cleaned and delivered on time. Then give him your duffel bag of laundry and say, this has been properly laundered for you. Take the duffel bag. It will be light as a feather. Return to the inn and enjoy the buffet. Changing modes, Buffett unzipped his shorts as he asked, do you like a buffet? I have a Buffett buffet for you now. And if is paradise. I carried out the drug transaction as ordered, the whole ordeal lasting a matter of minutes. A buffet was spread in the courtyard of the White House Inn at 4 p.m. just as Buffett said it would be. But due to the food and water deprivation necessary to maintaining my mind-controlled trance, Houston forbid me from carrying out this last part of Buffett's instructions. Alex Houston Enterprises was another side business that Houston used to cover for his CIA criminal covert activities. It included their relabeling of G.E. capacitors for the energy savings companies, Queen Electric and Phase Liner, he shared with his former wife and first CIA mind-controlled slave. She was a Catholic-processed Puerto Rican blonde beauty. These GE capacitor banks were sold internationally as energy-saving devices, when in fact they provided one more means of transporting drugs from the U.S. around the world. It was Houston's GE capacitor scam that provided me insight into the elaborate Long Island docks drug network run by U.S. Congressman Gary Ackerman, D. New York. For I first met Ackerman in 1981 when Houston was booked into the Woodbury Music Festival with known CIA mind control victim Loretta Lynn. 5. Loretta's road manager, neo-Nazi pedophile Ken Riley, who was also Alex Houston's best friend, often assisted Houston in handling me. Riley in turn handed my charm school-programmed keys, codes, and triggers to Congressman Ackerman, who skillfully accessed my Alice in Wonderland mirror theme programming. After snorting a couple of lines of coke, he stepped into the center of a three-way mirror where he positioned me and proceeded to sexually gratify himself in my throat. Ken Riley, and other involved members of Loretta's band, all laughed as Ackerman stumbled around the room while pulling his pants up from around his ankles and complaining that he couldn't stand for sex like that. The term Ackerman syndrome was coined after that in reference to sex that drained a man of his energy, and circulated among those who know, for years. 1. NCL cruise ships routinely pass through the so-called Bermuda Triangle, and Byrd did not miss this opportunity to tap into old programming base installed by Senator L. Bennett Johnston. 2. When Mark and I turned in detailed information on this drug drop to law enforcement, our lives were endangered to the point that a foreign intelligence officer intervened and subsequently saved our lives through a timely tip-off. 3. Diamond in the rough was a term used to describe an MPD/DID slave actively engaged in programming via torture conditioning. 4. Congressman Ackerman's Caribbean cocaine and Asian heroin operations have not hindered his position on the Congressional Post Office and Civil Service Committees, nor the Asian and Pacific Affairs Committee. It is important to note that, as a matter of congressional record, Ackerman openly opposed compulsory drug tests for all federal employees. 5. Senator Byrd proudly claimed Loretta as his mind-controlled slave and told me, "I literally made Loretta what she is today, and she is made to order." Loretta's son and secondary mind control handler, Ernest Ray, told me, "I know what the Byrd did to my mother. I can get away with murder. All I gotta do is call him and I'm free as a bird/Baird."